get the meeting called to order of the State Government Finance Division for March 11th. Representative Freiberg, you were here early. Did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
Yeah, they look amazing.
Representative Freiberg moves the approval of the minutes for March 10th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. First bill we have on the docket today is House File 983, Representative Elkins. And this has to go to Ways and Means. So if you want to make the motion.
I will so move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Elkins moves that House File 983 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Welcome to the committee. Please, if you can start your testimony and or your description of the bill. And I see we have a couple testifiers. If they want to start moving on down here, we can get sure. Moving.
Yep. So the bill would allow local governments other than charter cities, which are already allowed to adopt ranked choice voting, but it would allow statutory cities, townships, counties, and school boards to by their local option adopt ranked choice voting for their method for conducting their elections. The bill has already been through but local government and GovOps. So we're here because it does permit the Secretary of State to conduct a rulemaking, and they probably would. The bill standardizes the procedures and tabulation methods for conducting ranked choice voting, which will make it a lot easier for additional local governments to use it. So they've estimated it in the fiscal note as a standard small rulemaking, about $45,000, and that's why we're here this morning, and we'll be sending it to Ways and Means next.
Okay, I have a Jim Dorsey on the list. What's that?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. And the next I have a Maureen Reed. If you want to tee yourself up and get on the ready to move, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape.
My name is Jim Dorsey. I'm a lawyer with Fredrickson & Byron in Minneapolis, and I recently joined the board of Faribault, Minnesota. Faribault, Minnesota is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that promotes electoral systems that are more competitive and representative. And as it happens, I also represented Faribault, Minnesota in a case in 2009 in which the Minnesota Supreme Court, in a unanimous opinion, upheld the constitutionality of the Minneapolis ranked choice voting system. So let's begin with a quick discussion of what ranked choice voting is. And for this, I'm going to be quoting from a New York Times editorial, which endorsed ranked choice voting, of February 27th, 2020, just a couple weeks ago. Ranked choice voting works on a simple premise. Instead of being forced to choose a single candidate, voters rank some or all the candidates in order of preference. They rank their favorite candidate first, their next favorite candidate second, and so on. If one candidate wins the majority of the vote outright, he or she is the winner. If not, the ballots are tallied in a series of rounds. In each round, the candidate with the fewest first place votes is eliminated. Each ballot ranking that candidate first is then transferred to the candidate whom it ranked second. The process repeats, eliminating the lowest scoring candidate and redistributing his or her ballots until one candidate has more than 50% of the vote. An example of how ranked choice voting could have helped recently, we can look at our state's recent presidential primary, in which 52,000, or 7%, of the Democratic voters voted early for a candidate who'd withdrawn by the time of Election Day. Without, in the absence of ranked choice voting, those 52,000 votes were not counted. Now, since the decision I referred to by the Minnesota Supreme Court in 2009, ranked choice voting has been shown to promote several principles that are important to the electoral process. First, ranked choice voting is nonpartisan. Second, ensures candidates win by a majority. Third, ranked choice voting is more efficient than two-round elections, saving taxpayer and candidate resources and making it simpler for voters. Fourth, ranked choice voting is easy to use. For this, in the 2017 Minneapolis mayoral race, nearly 90% of voters actually used the ranking for their mayoral candidates, and they had an effective ballot rate of 99.96%, which number, regardless of the voting system we're talking about, is impressive. Then the last 3 points here are probably the most important. Ranked choice voting has been shown to increase diversity of candidates. Ranked choice voting leads to higher voter turnout. And ranked choice voting fosters civil campaigns. Given that record, it's no surprise that in recent years ranked choice voting has spread across the country. New York has adopted it. It's on the ballot in Alaska this fall. And in Minnesota, Rochester, Red Wing, Bloomington, and Minnetonka are all in different stages of exploring ranked choice voting. Other cities may wish to consider ranked choice, but if they're not charter cities, they don't have the authority to do so. This bill, as mentioned, would take care of that. The bill would also standardize rules around ballot design and other procedures, which are especially important for cities like Rochester and Red Wing, which have their local elections in even years when state and federal elections are also held. Jean Massey is the executive director of Fair Vote, and she can't be here this morning, but she wanted me to emphasize this following point. While all age groups favor ranked choice voting over the current system, young voters are the most enthusiastic about ranked choice voting. Jean reports that Fair Vote Minnesota is hearing from the new generation of voters from all political stripes and everywhere it goes, from the Minnesota Farm Fest to state fair to county fairs and local parades. They want to see our democracy work better, and they believe ranked choice voting is the way forward. Let me close with two thoughts. First, Professor Larry Diamond, professor of political science and sociology at Stanford and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute, which is a conservative think tank, is a leading scholar in the field of democracy studies. Professor Diamond came to Minnesota a couple months ago, and he stated that ranked choice voting is the single best Archimedean lever that can overcome our democracy's current hyperpolarization. As we all recall from high school, Archimedes once famously said, "Give me a lever and a place to stand, and I can move the world." Well, in effect, Professor Diamond is saying that ranked choice voting is the single best thing this legislature can do to restore and promote a healthy democracy. And second, and with this I'll close, and this is an argument I made to the Minnesota Supreme Court in 2009. Part of the genius of our federal system is that we've created 50 laboratories for democracy. Particularly at this troubled time in our nation's history, I got to believe that our founding fathers would want us, the people, to use those laboratories, as this bill would permit, and as they would say, in order to form a more perfect union. Thank you. If you have any questions, or I can wait to the end of the testimony.
I just have one question, and maybe it's more of a statement. In the last 2017 Minneapolis election with ranked choice voting, and you in your statement you said it ensures somebody gets over 50% of the vote. My understanding is that in Minneapolis, the mayor that when they exhausted all the ranked choices, Minneapolis's mayor did not get 50% of the vote. On the other hand, St. Paul's got elected on the first over 50% of the vote without going to the ranked choice. So,
yeah. So can I address that, Mr. Chair? So,
Representative Elkins.
So part of the reason of that is because we don't have a standardized ballot. For practical reasons, the city of Minneapolis had to limit the number of choices to, I think it was three, which is in a race with that many candidates is what led to the ballot exhaustion. So if we standardize the design of the ballot, we'd be able to put more selections on there, and there would be many fewer exhausted ballots. One of the advantages of this bill.
Thank you. The next person is Maureen Reed. We'll ask questions at the end. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Maureen Reed. I also am a member of the board of Fair Vote Minnesota, and I'm pleased to be here this morning. I'm retired from the practice of medicine, and I teach undergrads, but really the most important thing that I do right now is work on behalf of democracy improvement through Fair Vote Minnesota. I'll give you just three quick little stories. I live in Grant, Minnesota. Now, most people couldn't find Grant on a map. Grant is small. Grant is rural, and Grant is statutory. We are not so far from Stillwater, but as a statutory city of maybe 5,000 or under 5,000, and I've lived there for 40 years, what we see in our local politics is a toxicity and a poison that as a citizen of Grant just disgusts me. And the folks that run for office are not bad people. They are sucked into a system of mudslinging and vilifying the other in order to get a constituency that will allow them to secure the seat on the city council. I regret, as election day approaches each cycle, to know that there's going to be another flyer in my mailbox stuck in there that is vilifying one side or vilifying the other side. We in Grant, because we are a statutory city, don't even have the possibility of considering ranked choice voting. And yet ranked choice voting is one way to help diminish the poison in our electoral process. As part of my role on the board of Fair Vote Minnesota, I've had the opportunity to go throughout the state of Minnesota talking to community groups, to rotaries, city councils, county commissions about ranked choice voting. The reactions are very interesting and absolutely heartwarming. One of the episodes that I had maybe 8 months or so ago, I was in Staples, Minnesota. I was talking to a Rotary group about ranked choice voting. The first question I got is, why haven't we heard of this before? So knowledge of ranked choice voting is pretty thin outside of certain areas that already use ranked choice voting. But a very interesting comment from one of the Rotarians at the Staples lunch meeting was, you know, my wife wanted to run for school board in this area here, and she decided not to. And the reason she decided not to is that she would be subjected to slander and bad comments from her opponents. They weren't even named yet, but she knew she would be subjected to that kind of slander. But he said, worse than that, she was concerned that she might have to reciprocate and that she might have to stoop to tactics that were less than what she held herself to be. And so she decided not to run. If we had ranked choice voting here in Staples, he said, she might have run and she might have considered putting herself forward. She would have been a great member of our school board. Second quick story I'll tell is about a county commissioner in one of the counties in rural Minnesota who, after discussing and presenting on ranked choice voting, she leaned forward and said, you know, when I was in my last election, it was a contested election, I was door knocking and I walked past the yard of someone whom I thought was a friend of mine, and they had my opponent sign out on their yard. And I was so angry, and I'm still kind of mad at them, I was so angry that they weren't supporting me. If we had ranked choice voting, I would have gone up to that door, I would have knocked on the door, and I would have said, friend, what can I do to earn your second choice, second place vote? It would have been a very, very easy conversation for me to have. So as we move through and we think about the ramifications for ranked choice voting across Minnesota, I hope we don't forget the rural areas, the areas in outside of the metro area, places like Staples, places like Brainerd, places like Ely and Tower and Alexandria, where I have presented to groups who are thirsty and eager for information about ranked choice voting. I'll end with this note. Because I teach undergrads, I see young people in their late teens, early 20s, and they are not pessimistic about the future. They are pessimistic about our democracy, and they hate the poison that is in our system and attends our elections. Ranked choice voting is the way to help them see the beauty of democracy in a wide, wide form. And I urge this committee and the legislature to move forward to allow communities like Grant and others in Minnesota to choose ranked choice voting should they so wish. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next person I have on the list here is Anissa Hollenshed. From Rochester. Apparently they didn't make it up yet, or this morning. And then I have a Sean Nelson Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and you can proceed with your testimony.
My name is Sean Nelson. I am a resident of the city of Bloomington. I also have the privilege of serving on our city council in Bloomington, so we'll speak a little bit from both of those perspectives today. I do want to make it clear that I'm not here to advocate for or against ranked choice voting, but specifically for the ability of cities to choose for themselves the opportunity to make that decision within their community, as Bloomington has that opportunity because we are a charter city currently. I'll talk a little bit about our experience in Bloomington. I also just want to make it clear that I'm not specifically representing the city of Bloomington here either. But in Bloomington, we started this process last year. We had a joint meeting with our charter commission to learn more about this, to take in information, to have a discussion. It was a very robust discussion. A lot of questions came up, things that I think that specifically this bill goes a long way to address, things along the nature of what would happen, how does a recount work in a ranked choice voting system versus a system that we currently have with a primary and then a general election. And this would address that and help answer that and standardize it across the state for us. Those types of questions are addressed here. We since then, the city council has asked that the charter commission take and explore the opportunity to put this on the ballot this fall for residents in Bloomington to make the decision if this is the system that they would like in our community to select their local leaders. And they will be meeting in, I believe, late March or early April to do that. The other opportunity that we have through making this decision at the local level is there's a lot of opportunities for our community to engage on this issue. It was a question that was asked during the election, during the campaign, both at the League of Women Voters Forum as well as the Chamber of Commerce Forum. So people, when they made their election decisions in last fall, were able to know at least where those of us that were on the ballot stood on this issue. Ultimately, again, they will be able in Bloomington to decide for themselves if this is the system that they would like. City level government has a lot of opportunities to engage. We have public forums at all of our council meetings. They're, you know, in the city. With all due respect, it's not in St. Paul, so people can easily get there, share their opinions, and talk with us about if this makes sense. And ultimately, in an ordinance and or in a charter, there's public input before a vote is taken, and all of those things allow the voice of the people to be heard on this issue, not just those of us that are fortunate to serve in elected positions. And the last thing I'd like to mention, I think that this, even for a charter city where we have the opportunity already, I think it's good to extend that to statutory cities. I also think for us, just having a common set of rules around this will make it a lot easier for us to implement as we go forward. A lot of our discussion at that meeting with the Charter Commission had to do with sort of the mechanisms and how it works, how the tabulations worked, like I mentioned earlier, how does a recount work, things of that nature. And having those things clearly defined will really assist even those of us that already currently have the opportunity. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate your consideration of this.
Thank you. Now, that's all the people I have who have signed up ahead of time. Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to speak? And come on down. We've got a little bit of a limit on this. That we've only got one other bill on the agenda. But
thank you. My name is Michael Holt. I live in St. Paul. We had a mayoral election in 2017 where we used ranked choice voting. We had 10 candidates, and I decided there were four of them that I thought would do a reasonably good job as mayor, and they were reasonably well aligned with my values, so I voted for all four of them. Melvin Carter was not my first choice, but I did vote for him. So when I got the news that Melvin Carter had won that election, I thought, great, Melvin's gonna be the mayor. I had selected him as one of my choices. If I had only been allowed to vote for one candidate, I would have had a very different reaction to his election. I would have been disappointed. Having ranked choice voting increased my sense of buy-in in the election, increased my sense of citizen engagement. And I think this is perhaps the most important reason to adopt ranked choice voting. Thank you. Or to allow cities to. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? questions of Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And was there any consideration of having a size? So if you have 100 people or 200 people in a town, you know, it appears as if this might be something that is much more popular with a larger city or maybe more workable.
Representative Elkins.
Mr. Chair, no, I can't think of any reason why size would matter.
Okay. Representative Kwa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of your testifiers brought up school board and county commissioner. I was shocked because in my area, those aren't partisan races, and you know, a lot of the smaller areas, they aren't partisan. And school board, a lot of frequently those are at large.
Yep.
And I'm not sure how this would work for an at large where you have maybe six people running for three seats, you know, and the functionality of that. But maybe there's a good way of doing that. I'm curious, there was discussion of where they only had three choices. You know, most people would be hard pressed to know all of 10 candidates to an in-depth, and knowing three probably would take quite a bit of effort. Is there instruction saying that you don't have to fill in all of them, that you are, you know, basically vote for the people you know? I mean, is what sort of instructions are given?
Representative Elkins, I guess he's done with his question.
Yes, thank you. So you can vote for as many or as few people as you want on the ballot. One of the reasons the bill is somewhat long is that the algorithm described accounts for multi-candidate elections like school boards. It's ideally suited for nonpartisan elections, like almost all local governments in Minnesota are. School boards actually, in terms of the feedback I'm getting, there's more interest there in school boards than almost anywhere else, because the ability to rank your votes pretty much is the antidote for bullet balloting. Under ranked choice voting, bullet balloting is counterproductive. You want to rank at least as many choices as there are seats available.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess maybe you're not familiar, when you have X number of positions openings in an at large, you can vote. It says on there you can vote for up to two or three or whatever it is. So you're already voting for multiple people. So, you know, frankly, if you get to vote for, so I've got a list of three of my top picks, and then I go down and have second picks for each of those three, and then I have third picks, you know, through five or whatever it is. When I was glancing at your algorithm, it didn't seem to take into account that you could have multiple firsts, seconds, thirds, et cetera, you know, if you went to this, like a school board election.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Representative Elkins.
Yes. So in a multi-candidate election like a school board election where there might, say, be three seats available, you would still rank all of your candidates, say, 1 to 10. And the algorithm is a little bit more complicated, but you still get the same principle that a winning candidate actually has to ultimately accumulate through the winnowing out process a majority of the vote. So you're wasting your vote if you only vote your extra votes if you're only voting for one candidate using bullet balloting. So you don't have to rank each of the three. You just rank them all, and the the best ones float to, the most popular ones float to the top.
My understanding is that ranked choice doesn't always provide a person, you know, there isn't an out, sometimes not an outcome of someone that has a over a majority.
Representative Elder.
Mr. Chair, I mean, this is the kind of the scenario that Chair Nelson was mentioning. So currently, with the few cities that have done it so far, the Secretary of State has not been able to certify a general ballot tabulating algorithm that can be certified for use in counting. And so the large cities that were first ones to adopt it had to basically use spreadsheets to do the tabulation, and it was impractical to do that with a great many ability to rank more than three choices on the ballot. So by standardizing the algorithm, putting the Secretary of State in a position to be able to certify the algorithm and the counting process and the standardization of the ballot design would enable the design of ballots that would allow enough choices that exhausted ballots would be rare.
Representative Quam.
Thank you.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No question. I just had a comment. Wanted to thank Representative Elkins for bringing this bill forward. Represent Minneapolis. We've had two mayoral elections where this has been used, and it's extremely popular. And I think the two most common reasons I hear are one, the campaigns, I think, are run very differently. Folks are talking to second and third choice votes. The debates are very cordial, and folks tend to be, getting along very well with their opponents, I think, as a result of this system. And the second is that I think there's a lot less, voters have to feel like they have to use a lot less political calculation in terms of whether an individual vote's going to be a spoiler for another candidate they might like. They just get to vote for whom they like and then rank the next two votes. And so it's been a popular choice in Minneapolis, and I think other cities should have the option. So thanks, Representative Elkins.
Right, thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A few things kind of I'm wondering about. Do you have any idea how many elections, let's just say in the metro area, for instance, where this would be, I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to get at is how many times you think this is going to be used on how many ballots? Do you guys really have that many people running here all the time where you're going to have 10 choices on every election?
Representative Elkins.
That's very common in school board elections in Bloomington. Not the last time before, I think we had 16 candidates on the ballot for school board, as an example. City council elections, it's they're usually not as many, but usually, I think the past election there were three or four candidates in most of the races.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you think that by doing this, you would reduce the vetting that might go on between candidates?
Representative Elkins.
I'm not. Can I ask for Mr. Chair a clarification of the question?
Representative Green.
Thank you. Yeah. So when we're looking for our candidates and we do our debates and you've got more and more people running now, and I would assume that the numbers are going to probably go up. And you've got an hour and a half debate, let's say, and you've got difference between three people on that stage or 10 people on that stage. You may only get one question per candidate. And so, you're going to have people that come to the top and people that don't. But now you're going to have all these choices, and you may be voting for someone you've only heard answer one question.
Representative Elkins.
Mr. Chair, in our city, the League of Women Voters and the Chamber of Commerce both hold debate forums, and typically when there are lots of candidates, they'll break it up into multiple panels, and so with a manageable number of people in each panel, so that each candidate does get a chance to be asked and to answer the questions.
And Representative Elkins, this would also put more onus on the voters to, I would think, to do a little more study about who they are, who the candidates are, if they were going to want a first, second, and third choice. It might
get more involvement by the voters. But Representative Green.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and it might, but it might also be much more confusing to a lot of people. It's going to be interesting to see over the course of the next few years how this plays out. I'm always a little leery when we start messing around with our election process, because you never know what's going to come in the future, and we could be asking for some trouble here, just in the confusion alone that comes from these things. You know, the last primary was mentioned, where the early voting really didn't work out very well, because a lot of people voted for candidates that were no longer in the race by the time the primary came. So, you know, the messing around with different things in our election, the dates when you can vote, the early voting, ranked choice voting, I think it's almost wishful thinking that this is going to stop bad behavior. I don't think that that's possible, but good luck, I guess.
Well, Representative Reed, I think some of that is on the candidates too. I know in my race, I've always tried to not go after my opponent. Some of that's up to the members, the people running, as saying that I'm not going to have a nasty campaign. It's and there are other external voices out there that may be putting stuff out there. But I think we as candidates and in the public, if they say they're not going to vote for someone that does that, that would go away. And I know that's one of the arguments that they have for it. Again, I'm not a big fan of ranked choice voting. My city looked at it, Brooklyn Park, and decided not to go with ranked choice voting. They are a home rule city. Mm-hmm. But this bill does is give the same choice that home rule cities have to the statutory cities. And so that's what this bill is doing, and standardizing the format. But yeah. So as far as the nastiness in campaigns, we are going through a stretch right now in our history where there are nasty campaigns and people think they can win doing that. If you look back in our history, going back to some of our first presidential races and some of those early campaigns, they were also very nasty between, you know, some of our founding fathers ran those same nasty campaigns, and in some cases even worse than what we do today. So some of that, I think, is up to the candidates involved to say, yes, I'm not going to go after my opponent. You know, he's a person that wants to step up and, or he or she is the person that wants to step up and do the job, and they're running for this position. They're not running against me. That's the way I've always ran my campaigns. Representative Green.
Well, I appreciate that, Mr. Chair, because I do the same thing. But and you're right, a lot of this negative stuff that comes out from outside sources. I think this is a little different, at least for us. And so one of the things that surprised me from my area is that we usually have to beg people to run for positions. Down here, you actually campaign for positions. We're asking people to step in and serve. And so it surprises me that your county commissioner races and your school board races get that nasty. But if they are getting that nasty, I don't think this is going to cure them. Thanks.
And Mr. Chair, can I?
Representative Elkins.
Just a couple of points. So it said that the states are the laboratories for the nation, and I think certainly in Minnesota, the cities are the laboratory for the state. So I think it makes perfect sense to start this out with, cities, counties, school boards doing this on a local choice basis to test it out and see if it actually works in practice the way we think it will work in theory. And then with respect to the local presidential primary, mm-hmm. there were thousands and thousands of people who voted in the Democratic primary for a candidate who dropped out within the last week. So those people's votes, anyone who voted for somebody who dropped out in the last weeks, their vote was literally wasted. Whereas if they had been allowed to rank their votes and say, this is my first choice, but if this person drops out, I'd rather have this person second or this person third, those people's votes wouldn't have been wasted. They would have still been counted.
And we have that some of the presidential primaries that went on yesterday that there's two states that, because of the early voting and their mail-in voting, that they're having that same issue that people have already sent their ballots in. But Representative Green, you want to call?
Just another question, and this is a quick one. I didn't think this was for the presidential races. This is only local. So you're talking about presidential race, which doesn't even apply to this, correct?
That's correct.
All right.
I'll represent Claiborne.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Elkins. I just want to say thank you. I know this is something that has been talked about in our communities, and it is more constituent-based than legislator-based. So I want to thank you for listening to the people in your district and bringing this forward. I would like to just address a few comments that our testifier, Ms. Reed, made. As a person who believes in positive language, I would encourage Ms. Reed that if she has young people who are considering running for office, to know that you never have to engage in nasty politics. And to Mr. Green, Representative Green's statement that most of the nasty pieces come from outside groups, that's true. And I just want to encourage anybody who's watching this hearing this morning to always look at the disclaimer that comes on a piece of campaign literature to see that it is not coming from the candidates generally, this nasty mud. It's coming from other groups who have an interest in who wins the campaign. So I just want to always encourage everyone in the legislature to use positive language when we address each other, use positive language when we're in our communities speaking about what we are hoping to do for our communities. And it just doesn't have to be nasty. That's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Yep. Representative Elkins, one thing that you didn't get brought out and didn't get mentioned in this, and that would be, is one of the things that I would think is a positive of the ranked choice voting, that, again, like I said, I'm not a big fan of it, but you eliminate the primary election, so it would save the local jurisdiction money from not having to run a primary, because everybody would be on the ballot, and then you'd rank your choices, and going forward, then you'd have the winner. So that actually saves money for local municipalities and election officials. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I mean, it not only saves money, I mean, if you're a city that has its municipal elections in an odd year, you know, typically the primary voting turnout might be 5%, certainly less than 10%, and so you're having a very small and possibly unrepresentative portion of the electorate deciding who's going on to the general election in November. Sometimes an August odd year primary yields unusual results.
Representative Albright.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Representative Elkins, do you have a companion bill in the Senate?
Oh, Representative Elkins.
Mr. Chair, yes, we have actually introduced a new bill in the Senate, and I don't think it's formally paired with the one that we're hearing here today, which is the same one we advanced last year, but Senator Jensen is carrying that bill in the Senate this year.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of interest in Representative Elkins. You're probably aware of the fact that the only bill currently moving in the Senate actually voids all ranked choice voting.
I am aware of that.
And so, best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Any further questions? If not,
Mr. Chair,
I'll renew your motion.
Renew my motion that we advance this bill to the Committee on Ways and Means.
All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The bill is passed and it's on its way.
Thank you.
And Representative Quam, we're running out of time here. No. Next bill on the is Representative House File 3119. Representative Quam. Welcome to the committee, and this also has to go to Ways and Means. And because it's not because there's money in it, but because it's creating new funds, Ways and Means has to see it. That's what we've been informed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because it doesn't do that within this next current budget, Mary Liz asked me that question the last time around. I explained that, and she said, fine, so it didn't, but if you believe and the chair wishes to see it there, then I don't have an issue with making such a motion.
Representative Quam, again, that's what I was told, that as we've been told here, that because it's creating new accounts and new funds, that it has to go to Ways and Means to be seen. So it'd be easier to do that than have it go to the floor and come back and have to go. So we'll just send it there and he can take care of it.
And as I said, I would make such a motion then.
Representative Quam moves that House File 3119 be moved or referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Present your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is meant to be a win-win-win bill. Many of us have heard the Christmas in July, the you got to spend it so you don't lose it. And I heard those discussions with the Minsky faculty union meeting. And the sentiment was, we know how to do things best, right, and better. And instead of spending it so you don't lose it, and maybe they felt the sentiment was wasting some money, if we had part of it that we could choose, pick the tools. Maybe it was a software app at their desk. Maybe it was a developing a special tool or process to do their job better, more efficiently, or supply the citizens better. So the win is for the citizens, so their tax dollars go farther, so we have funding for additional programs. The win is for the agencies, so they can be more efficient and provide better services and completion of the mission. And I think the best win is with the employers. Frequently, new employees have this, well, what if, you know, what if we did this and this, but they might not be familiar enough. So if we empower the experienced employees, our state workers, to gain back that what if mindset, now that they've got decades of experience, we can do things better. I think there'd be more job satisfaction. There would be, you know, a better morale within the agencies if they feel that they had a voice, they were listened to, they made it better. That job satisfaction, I think, has value too. And I'm available for questions.
Okay, questions. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I missed this, the fiscal note in the packets from 2011.
What's that?
Mr. Chair, Roberts. And Representative Olson, you're correct. I did not request a new fiscal note on this, although as it's moving forward to Ways and Means, I will. But I was actually staffing this committee in 2011 and remembered that we had a fiscal note that showed no cost. So it'll be interesting to see if a new fiscal note shows the same result.
Representative Quab.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Olson. Gain sharing, some other programs that were meant to save money, questions popped up when there actually was additional cost. It cost more to do those programs than to, you know, that they were showing a savings. And so there was some attention given to that several years ago across, I think, a few years. And on this program, there wouldn't be any expenditure, it would be unless there was savings. And so they did do a fiscal note in the past, looking at it with the same mechanisms. And I look forward to a fresh analysis.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When the program was effective, how well utilized was it?
Representative Quam.
Thank you. Unfortunately, it was not well utilized. There was a little bit of utilization, but at the same time, there was some initiative with continuous improvement, with gain sharing, and some other programs that got higher profile attention. And I thought, I was a freshman a few weeks in. I thought that there wouldn't need to be, additional training and et cetera to help promote that. This time around, I've reached out to MAPE, SEIU, AFSCME. If this proceeds, I plan to meet with some of the commissioners and have a conversation how this could be utilized as a tool for the good of each of the departments and agencies, and to help empower the workers. So, and I'd be open to if it's 50-50 now, if it's 60-40, but I think there needs to be a showing of savings, and also a showing of here's money that a split between administration and faculty, or management and the workers, get together and say, how can we use this money to do our work better? We in the legislature don't have the intimate knowledge to be able to do the best job of, when it gets down to the front line. We have buckets and areas that we put money into, but that execution sometimes is handicapped by silos or not knowing the direct applications. Often we allow flexibility for school boards across several funds to level out and adjust. This would be a way of, empowering the people that know the job to have a little bit of influence on how they can make the job better. People say, well, what are the examples you can think of? And truly, this is about the examples that I cannot think of, that we as a legislature can't think of, but the people that actually are there front line in our agencies providing service to our citizens can think of.
And Representative Olson, in GovOps, where this was heard earlier in the week, the somebody from the administration came and spoke and said that one of the problems why it was only used one time was that currently we have an Odyssey fund where they have excess money. Instead of going back to the general fund, they can put it into that for IT projects going forward, but they get to use 100% of that money. The program before, the 50-50 match, they only get to keep 50% of the money, and the other goes back to the general fund. So most agencies were using the Odyssey fund as a way to preserve that money for ongoing expenses or for IT work, and that, so therefore they didn't look at it as an advantageous program. But Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And frankly, it might take a while before they realize, and I didn't do as much communication back in 2011, but I have learned some. So I was that what if, and now I'm that what if, but with a little more background knowledge, and the realization that as a legislature, we don't have all the details, and that's why I was hoping this approach, if utilized, would invigorate the people that do have the details to do a better job for the citizens.
Representative Olson.
That's it, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Quam. I like the idea of always encouraging savings in our government spending. I think that's, if it's the right way to use the money, it's the right way to use the money. If not, we shouldn't be spending it. But I have two questions for you. The first one's a simple yes and no. You and I both serve on higher education. I didn't see this bill in higher ed because you're talking about the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Have they had a chance to comment on this bill? Just simple yes or no.
Representative Quam.
Not officially in a committee.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next question I have is, would these efficiencies also include the unspent appropriations for unfilled positions? And I'm thinking about the unfilled positions that we currently have in corrections.
Representative Quam.
I have another bill that addresses that.
So in this bill, is that a yes or no?
No, this bill is not intended to get into the FTE.
Your FTEs? Okay, thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Quam, does this bill have a Senate companion?
Representative Quam.
My understanding is it does. The word I got back was Senator St. John was going to drop it again. If you notice on the fiscal note from before that, you know, St. John carried it in the past. I had sent it over. Another reason why now is because we've heard the people hear so much about waste, you know, the Department of Health and all these other things. I'd like them to hear about the legislature trying to do something to help get rid of that waste. I guess a positive as opposed to all of the negative we tend to hear.
Representative Quam, in my work career, I worked as a carpenter in both public sector and in private sector. And in my experience, there was a lot more waste in the public or the private sector than there was in the public sector, because from my experience there was that most of the employees that work for the public sector realize they have a limited budget. This is how much money we have to spend. We're not going to get any more till whatever the next fiscal year is. And if we waste it, we are going to end up not being able to do our jobs, and we're going to have to make cuts before the end of the year. So my impression is that for the most part, our public employees are very conscientious about that and very frugal. On the other hand, there's been times that when I worked in the public sector that we came up with ways and ideas that saved us money. And sometimes it was simple things. If we had a receptive management team that would help us save money, that we could stretch our budget for the whole year. So I've seen both sides of that, but like I said, in my experience, I've seen more waste on different times. And again, it's the industry I work in and the private sector. And some of that is it's cheaper to throw something out than to take it to the shop and then bring it to the next job site, because by the time it gets to the next job site, the material is going to be destroyed. But that's, you know, so sometimes there's that cost is built into their bids and their projects going forward. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members and Representative Quam, I take a little bit of a different tact on this bill. While I appreciate the motivation and I appreciate the incentive here, I don't think that this is necessarily just about, as I would relate in a bill to promote austerity and from a kind of a negative perspective, the idea of how can we save money. Chair Nelson, I agree with you that I think both the public and the private sector have ample opportunity to give proof to both waste as well as innovation. And I've seen that as well from the private sector. But I think, Representative Quam, to your point and what you're trying to achieve here isn't so much about cost savings. But I do think that it does promote innovation and a cultivating an atmosphere, if it isn't already existent, to encourage them based upon profit and an economic incentive to see how things can be accomplished better, smarter, faster, with maybe a more holistic approach, with even the incentive to provide a deeper and more meaningful experience with the government that they have created and elected to. So while austerity might be an important function in consideration of this bill, I do think that it weighs more heavily on the opportunity to innovate. And for that, I congratulate you for bringing it forward again. Thank you.
Is there anybody in the audience that wants to speak on this bill? Seeing no hordes of people rushing to the microphone, Representative Quam, if you want to renew your motion and do a final wrap-up.
You know, I think we all have, you know, understand the intent. And hey, if there's an improvement that can be made, I'm open to it. But with that, I will renew my motion.
Representative Quam renews his motion to re-refer House File 3119 to the Ways and Means Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is passed. Members, with that, we have a short day today. We see you tomorrow morning. We're adjourned.